B-Pod Studios.
Straightforward.
You lose too, big boy.
No holds barred.
I'm starting to think this guy's a con man.
Sports talk.
I got it. All right, I got it.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, hi, everybody. Welcome to the program. Felger and Maserati on a Monday. We call it Reentry Monday, where we go over everything from the weekend. Sort of reenter the work week, reenter the sports talk conversation. And so I think we got a good reentry Monday. Maz, how you doing, man?
Good, you?
I'm just peachy. Thank you so much. We got Big Jim Murray in our Town Fair Tire Studios as well.
Hello.
Okay, enough of the pleasantries. There is a lot to get to from the weekend. I believe that. I think the Celtics are probably the lead story. And that meltdown on Saturday against the Clippers and the fallout after the game. But we also have Sox pitchers and catchers tomorrow. Did you know that, Boston?
Woo-hoo!
Red Sox start tomorrow down in Fort Myers. I have some Bruins takes, and I think I'm starting to crystallize. I had a hard time figuring out exactly how I felt about them and their prospects and what they should do at the deadline, which is 2 weeks from today. NHL trade deadline is 2 weeks from today, so I got some thoughts on that I think are worthwhile. They had back-to-back overtime wins over the weekend. There's a new football league out there, a new spring football league out there that's, I think, gotten a little bit of traction in its opening weekend. I want to hit on that. There's also been a coaching exodus on the Patriots staff. I want to get to that. So I think we got a lot of stuff. Why don't we treat it with like a opening take kind of thing like we would on a Friday?
Sure. Murray, go.
All right, Maz. Because Saturday night Celtics game quickly went from boring as hell to embarrassingly repulsive, I did need another sports option while I was laying on my couch like a slug, and you just mentioned the Alliance of American Football. This is what I decided to give a go, the AAF. Specifically, I watched the game between San Antonio and San Diego, and I was happy that I did. The product, surprisingly not terrible. It's not great, but it's not terrible. There's no flags for crushing quarterbacks. The transparency with the replays and the refs I found tremendously refreshing. The game moved at a good pace. Uniforms are gorgeous throughout the league because I watched some of the games last night and yesterday. Thanks to the good production values from CBS, certainly makes it more palatable. And it has something that money can't buy at all and that every business lusts for, and that's buzz. And that will probably go away, or it's not going to be as sustainable as it was for their opening weekend. But the Twitter buzz for the AAF over the weekend was seemingly nonstop. If you weren't watching, it felt like you were missing out. Because I, you know, again, I watched this in conjunction with the Celtics Saturday night. And then yesterday I was like, meh. And then scrolling through Twitter, I was like, man, there's more games going on. Like, I need more of the AAF. They beat out Thunder and Rockets on Saturday night with two of the biggest stars in the NBA.
They beat them out in terms of national TV ratings.
Yep. So they beat out Russell Westbrook and James Harden, proving that the football-loving public, myself included, just wants more football. The product can improve, and there's ways, you know, we could talk about it, but it, like, you know, maybe if they take some of the guys from practice squads of NFL, there are some NFL names in there, at least the coaches, you know, some of them, like Mike Martz, who looks like he ate Mark Bulger. But the game
he does. He's huge.
The games were good. From what I watched, the games were entertaining. There's enough there for me to be entertained, and I think I can already declare I like the AAF.
Okay, that's one of the things we're going to hit on today on a reentry Monday. Are you ready to go yet, Maz?
Yeah, I'm ready to go now. So I just want to follow up with you on that Laker game last week between the Celtics and the Lakers, and when you said the Lakers got lucky in, have you changed your mind?
Yeah, well, no, not on that game, but the Clipper game was a different game.
Okay, so now the Celtics lead the Clippers by 28 points. They blow the game.
Different night.
Marcus Morris comes out after the game, criticizes the team, calls them a bunch of individuals. Holy crap, what a statement that is. And then the coach, after the fact, says, well, you know, we have had some issues in the middle of the game sustaining defense through the second and third quarter, so I suppose I got to take it on myself to kind of figure out how we're going to solve that. Oh, really? Congratulations. Thank you for wanting to coach the team. It only took you 60 games or whatever the hell it took. Listen, there's one solution to this. Take playing time away from people who don't deserve it. It's the only way it's going to work. This team has a leadership problem. They've had a leadership problem all year. They have a young guy problem because the worst thing that happened to this team in retrospect was these young guys getting to the conference final last year and actually thinking it was because of them, as opposed to being just maybe a kind of combination of factors that lined up right. And so the Celtics are what they are now. So look, do I think the season's over? No. Do I think they have problems, deep-rooted, serious problems? Yes. And I believe that there has to be some sort of major roster shakeup, be it now, and it's post-deadline, so unlikely, or more likely in the summer. Someone's got to go.
So you're sort of pulling the cord on this team.
I'm not entirely yet because I don't think it's over. But someone's got to go. Okay? And I think it's Jaylen Brown. If you were to ask me at this stage.
Well, that's who they're blaming. I can tell you that. That's who the veterans are blaming.
I mean, to me, it feels like a Jaylen Brown problem. Okay? I just think too many common denominators. Jaylen Brown's the one saying that they've won five titles. Jaylen Brown's the one that, whose play has been up and down and all over the place. Jaylen Brown's the one who got into it with Marcus Morris during the timeout. That, you know, it always seems to be Jaylen Brown somehow, some way involved in it. And just quickly, as an aside, I'll save the second point for later. Let's just leave it at that. Something major has to happen with this team. They're past the deadline now.
You started with the coach.
Okay, so I was going to go in that direction.
No, go ahead.
If I knew differently, the coach would be in jeopardy. If this were a team in any other market, in any other year, we would look at the coach and say, this team needs a major shakeup, and the way to fix it is to get rid of the coach.
If it were another sport and another team, I think you're fair to say if there were a team that were underachieving, that were less than the sum of its parts, that had championship contending caliber and was a five seed. Oh, if it were if it were the coach, I'd be all over the hockey coach.
You'd say he'd lost the room or whatever message he's trying to get out there. They've tuned out. That you wake up today and they're the five seed.
And they've been all year. It's all year?
It's unbelievable. And look, I say this because I think they go hand in hand. The simple fix when you have a team like this is to change the coach. Okay, you change the coach, you change the rules, you change the structure and the hierarchy, you change the rotations, all of that. The new guy comes in, lays down the law, you've got a new leader. That's how you change it. They're not going to do that, I don't think. I'd be shocked if they fire Stevens. So the only way to fix it is a major trade, and they're past the deadline.
Are you advocating for that, by the way?
The coach?
Yeah.
No, because ultimately I think it runs deeper than that. But I would say that that's the simple, easy fix right now. If you were to say, do it right now, what do? You fire the coach.
So
they're not going to do that.
Marcus Morris comments, I'm telling you. Jimmy, maybe you could cue some of these up. Again, this is, you know, so apparently what I was reading is he's in the training room while the rest of the guys are dressing and leaving, and he's slamming a medicine ball into the floor. Like he's zoom, zoom. And then he comes out. Did I read that he still had his shorts on, his game shorts on? Like he hadn't even undressed yet, and goes to the media and basically just rips into his team.
For me, it's not really about the loss, it's about the attitudes that we're playing with. You know, guys are, you know, hanging their heads. It's not fun, man. Like, it's not fun. We're not competing at a high level. You know, even though we're winning, it's still not fun. You know, I don't see the joy in the game. I watch all these other teams out in the league, and guys up on the bench, they're jumping on the court, they're doing all, you know, other stuff that this look like is they enjoying, you know, their teammates' success, they're enjoying everything, and they're playing together, and they're playing to win. And when I look at us, I just see a bunch of individuals.
Okay. He goes on to say it hasn't been fun for a while. Do you have that, Jimmy, that little follow-up? Which was sort of odd because they had won 10 of 11 before this little L.A. stretch at home. Hasn't been fun for a while, he says. So there is something about, well, Jimmy, do you have it? Or just play the next one.
The goal has to be to win. Bottom line, we can't. We got to play to win. That's sacrificing playing hard. That's sacrificing, you know, being a better teammate. That's sacrificing whatever it is. You know, we have to put it to the side. No one's getting traded. The trade deadline's over. We compete for a championship, and that's how we got to approach these games. We're going to lose a draw, man. We're going to lose games, but we don't have no attitude. We don't have no toughness. We ain't having fun. You know, it's going to be a long season.
That surprised you that you're not having fun even when you were winning before this little stretch?
I mean, it hasn't been fun for a long time, man. This is, you know, it hasn't been fun for a long time. Matter, you know, winning or not, you know, the attitude is, you know, it is what it is.
Hasn't been fun for a long time. I just won 10 out of 11. So there is, I know Gasper's talked about this. They do, I mean, the losses feel like, boy, do they hit the panic button early after something. I mean, that was a bad loss on Saturday, don't get me wrong, but it's only two in a row. only a couple games out of the three. It's not, but all of a sudden, it's like,
well, how many times this year? It doesn't take much for them to unravel like
this. Oh, my God.
They had won five straight going into that Lakers game. Now two straight, and you're getting this from Morris?
Okay, ooh, so
they don't like each other.
They hate each other. Let's be a little more succinct. There's some real issues in there. Real issues. All it takes is one or two losses, and they're blasting each other in the media or pushing each other on the sidelines or what? So, okay, that's obviously a big one today, maybe the lead story, but there's other things. I want to get to some Bruins later on because it's starting to crystallize what I think they are and what they can be, and that is, you know, I've been saying for a while, the trade deadline's 2 weeks from today, right? So do you go out and you sacrifice and give up a real piece to get a real piece back to what? Just lose to Tampa in the second round again? Because Tampa is by far and away the best team in the league. Or the best team in your division. They're far and away a favorite over you. And I think they're the best team in the league. It feels like they're running away with the President's Trophy, dot, dot, dot. So you're not going to catch them from a talent standpoint no matter what you trade away. So be careful. Don't trade away real assets just to lose to them in the second round again. And then I just, you know, I started to look at their roster more and their problems. And there are moves that they absolutely can and should make. And I want to say that they're easy, but what I really mean is they're relatively easy. And we'll circle back to this with more specifics, but what have been the two biggest problems on the team all season long? Okay, I think everyone knows. Right wing next to David Krejci and third line. Last year, they had a great one with Riley Nash, Backes, and Heinen. Okay? Heinen's taking a step back. Backes can't even get on the ice, and Riley Nash has gone in free agency. And you knew it at camp. You knew it in month one. You knew it in month two. And we're still here now in February, and they have no third line. And they still don't really have someone next to Krejci. The piece next to Krejci is going to cost you a lot. I'd like to put that to the side. How hard is it to go out and find a third line center out there? Where's the next Riley Nash? That is one that just occurred to me. It's like, dude, you can relatively easy go find that piece. Go find a good NHL level grinder who can give you a representative third line. Now, then you're going to ask, well, who is that for? Well, I don't know. Okay. I'll admit it. I don't know. I don't have the third line centers across the league or the third line pieces across the league. I don't. Not my job. My job is to piss you off and come in here and stir the pot every day, and that's what I focus on. I don't focus on who the third and fourth line centers are across the league, so I'm going to need a hockey expert to do that on their own time. I need Sweeney to do that because it really doesn't cost that much. They're out there. The next Riley Nash is there somewhere. They're really not that hard to find. Turns out none of your young guys could assume that role. None of the veterans that you have can fill that. It's been a total black hole the entire season. So go do that. You've got all this cap room. The third line pieces aren't going to cost you a lot in terms of high price, I don't think. Go find that guy. That should have been done a long time ago. Now that I think about it, that should have been done a long time. If you're telling me you don't want to spend a first round pick and two prospects for Panarin, like, I agree. Don't. That's a hard deal. Those are big deals. Those are expensive. And really, what are you doing anyway? But the third line pieces? Ah, come on. Like, enough of this revolving door of the Providence kids and the Fredericks and the Donatos and the guys that just haven't hooked. We're now, you know, what, two-thirds of the way through the season or whatever it is? Enough. Like, that's a relatively easy one they should be doing. And I still don't know if that closes the gap, but it's not going to cost you much and it'll help you maximize. So, like, that's where I've sort of come to with this team. I have more Bruins thoughts for you coming up. More on the AAF coming up. Red Sox, if you can believe it. And if you want it, let me give you a little bit of that. Celtics, obviously, the lead. To your phones on a Reentry Monday right after this.
Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke's blue.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Now, this is a sit down in a locker room and look at each other and say, this is really where the teamwork comes in. Somebody who's a leader at his ball club has got to stand up and has got to say, what do you guys think I can do better to turn this around? Show some humility. That gets the team back into being a team. But this is a perfect example of a time when teams who are losers start pointing fingers at each other. And when that happens, kiss the season goodbye.
It's not fun. It's not fun. We're not competing at a high level. You know, even though we're winning, it's still not fun. You know, I don't see the joy in the game. I watch all these other teams on the league and guys up on the bench, they're jumping on the court, they're doing all, you know, other stuff that this look like is they enjoying, you know, teammate success, they're enjoying everything and they're playing together and they're playing to win. And when I look at us, I just see a bunch of individuals. We're gonna lose a draw, man. We're gonna lose games, but we don't have no attitude, we don't have no toughness, we ain't having fun, no. It's gonna be a long season.
So Tommy Heinsohn with some really good commentary there at the end of the NBC Sports Boston broadcast. And he says, what you need now is a team meeting or someone to stamp in the locker room and show some teamwork. A leader has to say, what can I do better? Show some humility. He says, because if you start pointing fingers, then it's over. You're a losing team. Did Marcus Morris then in the postgame show humility and leadership and ask, what can I do better? Or did he point fingers?
I mean, he didn't show humility. I don't know that he called anyone specifically out, you know, but to me, it was more the latter than the former.
I mean, what Tommy was talking about there, did he do what Tommy wanted?
No.
Or the opposite of what Tommy wanted?
Yeah. I mean, again,
point fingers.
But the opposite would have been more what Kyrie did earlier in the year, right? Where Kyrie says, like, you know, he called out young guys. And I don't even remember specifically what he said. This to me felt more like a group indictment.
Okay, so he didn't specify young and old. It's true,
but it's more the second thing than the first.
Did he call himself out or everybody else out?
No, everybody. Period.
And if you go to Boston Sports Journal, Brian Robb did a great job. Marcus Morris was loafing and dogging it as bad as anyone on Saturday.
Oh, his defense was atrocious.
As bad as anyone.
Yeah,
not getting back. Well, really just not getting back and not playing defense. And Brian Robb sent, you know, had like three or four clips of Marcus Morris just dogging it. So he didn't point a finger at himself. I don't know. Tommy said a good team does this, a losing team does that. And I feel like Marcus Morris came out in the postgame and did that.
Now, I know Kyrie got hurt in the game, but I hear Tommy's comment and I think he's talking about Kyrie. Because again, Kyrie needs to show humility.
Okay, to your phones. As promised here on a re-entry Monday, everything on the board. Carlos and Bill Ricker. Go ahead, Carlos.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Watching the Celtics, this two game was ridiculous. It's unbelievable. 21 points with the Lakers, 27 with the Clippers. My personal opinion on this, I think the coach lost the direction of this team.
Okay, so thank you for the call. The coach lost the team. Is that what happened? Or is the team, they just, for whatever reason, don't like each other and the coach can't affect anything there? That's not how I would characterize this. I don't know if the Stevens ever had the team. When did he ever have them? This was a whole new mix of guys, and they were never on the same page, ever.
I mean, to me, there's a major disconnect there between young and old.
Hayward was hurt all of last year. Now, Kyrie played most of last year, and they played well, but he wasn't there for the postseason run. So this is the first time they were all together, all on the floor, all expected to be the second-best team in the league, third-best team in the league. Did he ever have him? Did that ever? So I don't know if he ever had anything to lose. Meaning, I don't think he ever lost it. I don't think it was ever there.
No. To me, again, I don't blame Stevens per se. I mean, he's part of the problem. He's part of it. But there's a major disconnect there between what they are and where they're going. The young guys think that by getting to the conference final last year, their plan is working. They think that.
Well, Jaylen Brown basically said it. His comments were like someone who actually won the East last year.
Okay, and look, on paper, you could look at it and say, sure, yeah, I mean, it's headed in the right direction, except we all know better. We all know that in that league, that doesn't win you a championship. The young guys don't know that. That's a problem.
Jay in the minivan, and you think it's the coach's job to let him know?
I do.
Jay in the minivan. Hi, yeah. Jay.
Yeah, I agree with Maz totally. If you look at the team and just based off attitude, not looking at positions or anything, it's Jaylen Brown that's got to go. And you noticed it when Kyrie made those comments a couple months back and Jaylen Brown said, like, I don't think you should be making those comments. And Jason Tatum had a different approach. He said, he admitted he was right. Jaylen Brown sounded like a baby. Like, he shouldn't be saying that stuff about us.
Okay, so I
blame it on the young guys.
Jay, I think he's definitely been singled out. I think Morris has singled. He shoved him on the bench for crying out loud a couple months ago. And other things, Murray pointed something out to me. I'll read to you later about who's the worst ball distributor on the team, meaning who has the most possessions without a pass on the team. It's Jaylen Brown. And that was just written today as well. So I do feel like there's critical mass building against Jaylen Brown. Is it deserved?
Yes, again, which is why, now look, there were lots of guys in the league who get the ball and don't pass, okay, which is fine. But it typically means you're a second unit player. You go in against the scrubs, and you can beat second-unit guys, and you're a scorer off the bench.
Well, the story
Brown says, thinks he's a starter.
The story pointed out that it's usually reserved for point guards and leading scorers. That either you're a point guard, and again, I'll give you the full stats in a little bit, but Rozier and Irving don't share the ball a ton either, but they're point guards. They should. I'm not describing this well, but the story says Jaylen Brown should not be on that list. He should not be on that list. It's scorers and point guards who handle the ball that much.
Yeah, to me, it's about passing the ball, okay? And again, it's about what your skill set is and understanding where your place is in the bigger picture. And so Brown, the problem with Brown is he thinks he's a superstar. He was the number 3 pick in the draft. He thinks he's a superstar. On a championship-caliber team, he's a bench player.
Anthony on Cape Cod on the Bruins, give me something.
Oh, yeah, nice league you got there. That's what happens when you decide you want to build your franchise around somebody who thinks the earth is flat. I've got take backlog. I got a pent-up Bruins take that I've been meaning to get off my chest. Do you know Don Sweeney's address? Because I need to ship him a pair of balls, okay? Pastrnak should not be on the second line. Why would you demote your best offensive player, okay?
I thought that was the right move, and that's not Sweeney's fault anyway, but I want Pastrnak there.
I kind of like it.
You're robbing Peter to pay Paul. He's done nothing since they moved him. And you're hurting both lines. You're hurting Pastrnak in the process. Nola Chari sucks. He's the worst player in the NHL. He doesn't deserve to be on this roster. And you can easily bring up Paul Carey to go on the fourth line in his place. And you need to trade for either Silverberg from Anaheim, Justin Williams, or Wayne Simmonds. Make it happen. Trade picks, trade Danton Heinen, do something.
Okay, I'm with you on a piece like that. Wayne Simmonds, I don't know how expensive he is. And Silverberg, I don't know how expensive these guys are. I'm telling you, third-line talent is out there. And again, I want to say easy, but relatively easy.
I mean, it's a good point. Like, right, you said Riley Nash. Chris Kelly was a third-liner.
You haven't replaced Riley. You lose Riley Nash. You say, okay, we'll try the kids, Forsbacka, Carlson. We'll see if another kid or what we have can fit in there. And they can't. You did it in month 1, in month 2, in month 3. Now we're in February, and nothing is stuck. So go find your next Riley Nash. Go find your next, who'd you just say?
Chris Kelly.
Chris Kelly, thank you. Sorry. You have Rich Prevost. Like, those guys, they're all out there, and they're not expensive.
I mean, you should be able to find a pretty good two-way guy who can score you 15 goals.
Right, it's there. They're there, and they're cheap, relatively cheap. And those deals are there compared to the Panarins. And again, I don't know how to treat Wayne Simmonds. That's an expensive rental, I think, for a guy who's up and kind of scares me, like power forward on the decline. But the third line guys, the league is filthy.
I mean, that should not be hard to fill. And it shouldn't cost a lot.
Enough. And it's really cost you. It's really cost you. Offensively, your 5-on-5 numbers blow. You're not a good 5-on-5 offensive team. You suck 5-on-5. And the big drop has been from that Riley Nash line last year to now. And so if he says Achari is... No. When it's Corrali, Achari, and Wagner, that fourth line, that's the line that I don't like them mixing up. You had that fourth line. And it was
no, that line's been working.
But they've sort of moved those pieces too, I think. Maybe a Bruins guy can correct if I'm wrong, but I thought they started to move those guys too, trying to move some of them up to a third line to get you a third line because they've been playing so well. I would leave that fourth line alone. Leave those guys alone. They do their job. And if I'm off on that, if I just sort of caught it at the wrong time, forgive me. But I would not touch that line.
Okay, so listen, on the third line center thing, I think a fair point that it should be easy to find and it shouldn't cost a lot. But that's not the big hole. The big hole is a top 6 forward.
It's the third line's been a big hole. Big hole. It's a big difference.
But what's a third line center? Where are you going to go with that? You going to win a cup?
No, nope. I don't know, but at least it's not going to cost me anything. So this is what I'm saying. Can we just start with that? That is an obvious cheap one. That's an obvious, cheap, relatively easy piece. So do that, and then we'll figure out the Panera, and then we'll decide whether the other thing's worth it. Because that one should be a no-brainer. That is like all that cap room and all these kids. You can't turn one of that into something that's going to help you. Like, that's just where I start. Right. So is it going to win you a cup? I doubt it. But then again, I didn't think Chris Kelly would win you a cup either. But just start with that, for crying out loud. Reentry Monday, Celtics, Bruins, Patriots, coaching staff losses. Does it mean anything? This new Fakakta Football League. How do we feel about it? Oh, yeah. Guess who's playing baseball tomorrow? The Red Sox. We have a Red Sox minute for you with Maz right after Murray's update.
You're listening to Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
I just don't know what to say anymore.
Wrong, sorry.
It's Felger and Maz.
They could use a good ass kicking.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Red Sox pitchers and catchers report tomorrow down in Fort Myers. The first Red Sox minute of 2019. Anthony, what do you got?
So I admit that this has been building for some time.
Love these. I love it when it builds with you.
Okay, this has been building for some time, but over the holidays, I was flipping through, reading a bunch of different things that were out there, and there were some Red Sox items that seemed to be a theme, that predictions and projections for 2019 from various media outlets in town, all about the Red Sox coming up. And I read something in Mass Live about how don't expect the Red Sox to win 108 games again. But they will win 100. And then I came across this in the Lawrence Eagle Tribune. Chris Mason from earlier in the year, right after the new year. Boston could play 500 baseball in April and still sleepwalk to 100 wins, he says. Their roster is loaded with talent. The American League has only gotten worse. And the Sox know how to elevate their game when the need arises. Let me go back to the first sentence. Boston could play 500 baseball in April and still sleepwalk to 100 wins. Still sleepwalk to 100 wins. When did we get this stupid? When did we get this stupid? Really? So look, they had a fabulous year last year. They were tremendous. They won 108 during the regular season. They won 11 more in the postseason, 11-3. You know the story. I don't need to repeat it for you. Now, all of a sudden, 100 wins is a given? Do you know how many times the Red Sox have won 100 games in their history?
I'm going to guess six.
Four. Two of them were before 1916.
Don't count.
Okay? 1946 and last year. Now they're just going to show up and sleepwalk to 100 wins. See, this is where it gets dumb, and I start to wonder, okay, when can I close the book on 2018? When can I actually open it again on 2019? When am I allowed to do that? Without being a complete a-hole and still being and coming off as someone who's ripping down the 2018 Red Sox. I'm not ripping them down anymore. But I will point out, because now's a good time to do it. The last time the Red Sox won an 18 championship, they went 86 years before they won again.
Okay.
So I'm just saying, let's not get stupid.
I had to think about that for a minute.
Me too. I had no idea what the hell you were saying.
Let's not get greedy. And Cafardo over the weekend, Nick Cafardo of the Boston Globe, had his manager ratings. And this is my whole thing now. Again, it's been piling up. Cafardo ranked the managers in the major leagues 1 through 30. Who do you think he had number one?
Cora.
Jimmy?
Francona.
Alex Cora. 1 year in, Alex Cora is now the best manager in baseball?
Who is?
I'll tell you what, debate it. Francona, Joe Thank Madden, you. Bruce Bochy, your guy, Craig
Thank you.
Counsell.
Thank you.
A year ago, people would have been saying Tori Lavello. Remember when we all wanted him and he was the flavor of the month?
I said that.
Kevin Cash, Bud Black. I tell you what, throw Cora into the discussion. I'm fine with that.
Nick better break some stories this year, then.
I'm totally okay with Cora being in the discussion. But 1 year and all of a sudden now he's the best manager in baseball, hands down. Francona's won multiple titles. Madden ended a 100 and whatever year drought it was with the Cubs. Bochy has won multiple titles. Cora wins one, now all of a sudden he's the best manager in baseball? Like, I look at the whole thing and I say, is anybody actually going to look at the team on the field and ask who's going to pitch out of the bullpen?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. What the Red Sox and Patriots did, added together, people are going to be gun-shy. People are going to be gun-shy.
I understand. So what, are we just going to stop doing the job?
Nope. That takes a real pro to put your head down and still rip them.
So here's what I would tell you, and there are a lot of young people out there covering teams now. We all know, and I'm not criticizing you for it. The one thing I will say, though, is you're way too positive. Way too positive.
In terms of him being the number one ranked manager, though, considering the job he did and pantsing A.J. Hinch and then Roberts and then Hermie the Elf with the Yankees in the playoffs last year, like, I feel like it's kind of well-deserved.
He's not number one, Murray. Not based on 1 year. The sample's not big enough. He had a fabulous year, but you can't now all of a sudden say he's the best manager in baseball. That's crazy. There are other
Does
guys
he that have to marinate a little bit longer? Like, I don't.
Well, no, yeah. No. Well, here's what, and I mean, he might be the best. I don't know. Let's see what they all do when something goes wrong. Nothing went wrong. Nothing.
No, the whole thing was a you know, I don't want to say a pleasure ride, because that's...
It was, I mean, the only...
No, the bullpen was a dumpster
okay,
fire.
Okay, so the bullpen was the only thing, but it never affected the win-loss record. They were never in danger in the standings, okay? So even when they had horrible bullpen performances, they were still winning for the most part. So, like that's it. They won through that piece, the bullpen piece, which they never figured out in the regular season. They didn't. They didn't figure out in the regular season. They changed their approach in the postseason, and that worked. And if they get back to the postseason, or any team gets to the postseason, if they're smart enough to use their starters, which the Dodgers were not, but, you know, they can overcome it again. But I don't know. What if that actually leads to losses this year? What if they actually have injuries this year? I mean, what if something goes wrong?
All of the above, again, this comment.
So then how does he respond? How does he respond? You know, it's pretty clear Alex Cora has rabbit ears. Like, he listens to all of us and all of this, and he takes it to heart. And so, I mean, what if he does something really wrong? That really, and I'm not just talking about one game here or there. I'm talking about, like, a stretch or a bad deal. How does he respond? We don't know.
I mean, the manager of the team himself, a month ago, was asked about the 2018 season and said, you think that was good? Wait till this year. So now we're just going to sneeze at 119 wins. It doesn't mean anything. Like, have we reached a point where we've gotten that stupid and that absolutely, like, delusional that we think you can, quote unquote, sleepwalk to 100 wins, that it's that easy? Let's just show up and sleepwalk to 100 wins.
It's the wrong verb choice.
Holy crap. It doesn't work that way.
There's your Red Sox minute. Did you enjoy it? Back to your calls after this.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger and Maz.
I love it.
You were right, Maz.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Krug with it. He'll march ahead to the center circle, over the logo, over the line, left side. He twists. Feeds to the right circle. Bergeron shoots. He scores! LeBron!
Okay, Bruins win a couple over the weekend. Celtics, a horrible Saturday night loss. The big issues with that team. We're mixing it all together on a reentry Monday. Right back to your phones. Ryan and Quincy on the Celts. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hey, what's up, boys? So I'm just sick and tired of the young guys getting blamed for this team's struggles. And what Looney Tune world are we living in where the franchise player, a $30 million teacher's pet, and the head coach are not held to the highest standard? The young guys aren't the ones losing their minds anytime somebody sticks a mic in front of them. That's the vets. That's the leaders. The young guys, 56 games in, haven't failed their first test managing real talent. That's the coach.
Okay.
It just seems absurd. It just seems absurd at this point. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, no, it's a fair point. Maz, you seem to point the fingers at the young kids.
Well, because I think that's the reason why the older guys are losing their mind, because they're the ones that are frustrated. Like, if you're not frustrated, you don't lose your mind. And I'm sorry, I believe in sort of a hierarchy that you got to kind of earn your way up. And honestly, what I think has happened to this Celtics team, too much success too early for some of these young players. They're not as good as they think they are. They think that because they got to the conference final last year, the next step is to win a championship. I don't think they have any real understanding of what's involved to do that or how good you have to be to win at that level. And I think they look at a guy like Kyrie and said, big deal, you won one title. But, you know, I was in the conference final last year, my first year in the league, and I don't think Tatum's as much of a problem as Brown. But so in my second year in the league, if you're Jaylen Brown, and I think that that's a problem.
So I think, and look, the problems have been there for the first week. The first time they go out west and lose a couple games, you know, Kyrie's talking about we need a leader that could come in. So look, I'm not telling you that these are recent issues, but however, since the deadline, there's a whole nother layer thrown on here, which is if you're a young guy, you're looking at it and saying, well, they're shipping our ass out of here in 2 or 3 months anyway. So what's the difference? Why engage? Why buy in? They haven't bought into us. They're about to trade us to freaking New Orleans. So you got to watch that one, too. Danny already hinted to Toucher and Rich that he had a talk with, I don't know who, Tatum, Rozier, a young guy, but we couldn't figure out exactly who he was talking about, but it would make sense if it were Tatum or Brown or, you know, any of these guys. So it's like, put that whole thing on top of it as well.
Definitely. And the irony for me, and the reason why I pick on Brown, is because Tatum's more talented. And honestly, of late, I think Rozier's been better. And not just when he's starting in the games that Kyrie's not playing. I think that when Rozier has gotten in there off the bench, he's played well. And so it feels to me like Rozier has kind of reconciled what his role is. Brown, I don't feel that. I don't feel like he's ever accepted it.
Walter in Marlboro. Go ahead, Walter. Walter! You can call us back, babe. I left you on hold there for quite a while. Sorry about that. How about our buddy Pete in Delaware? Hi, Pete.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I agree with both your assessments, but one thing I will say is, you know, as far as Jaylen Brown goes, if Gordon Hayward, and I'm not blaming Hayward, but look, the fact is he has not played well. And if he did play better and better and better, I think the Jaylen Brown situation wouldn't be as bad because Jaylen Brown would see how good Hayward is. But Hayward sucks. And I just don't think that the coach is handling it well. Something's got to give between those two players.
Okay, and I'm sorry, Pete, to cut you off. I think it's three. I think it's Marcus Morris, who is not the future and is up, Jaylen Brown, who is the future and is cost-controlled, and Gordon Hayward, who is the big money guy, and there are just redundancies there. So Pete's point is what fuels Jaylen Brown's frustration is that Gordon Hayward gets the minutes and he doesn't deserve it. It's one thing to be behind someone who deserves the minutes. That's a fair point. It's a fair point on Jaylen Brown. I'd also say this, that Stevens has caught a lot of flack for the amount of minutes that Hayward gets. It goes beyond Brad Stevens. Certainly he's the teacher's pet and he picked him up in the Prius and all of that, or the Subaru, like that for sure. But the owner shelled out over $30 million a year for him. The GM made this player the centerpiece of his free agent strategy. Like, the whole organization is invested in this guy. So it goes beyond Stevens. They all want him to play. They all want him to succeed. They all need a return on investment on Gordon Hayward. So it's not just the coach.
No, absolutely. And look, like, you know, there's a bit of a, you know, conundrum there too, right? Like, well, how do you expect him to get better if you don't play him? So, you know, there's you kind of spiral on that one, and it is what it is.
You're paying this guy $32 million and you give him 8 minutes a night like that. You know, if they were losing, you'd run into that too. And the owner would certainly say, why am I paying $32 million a year for this guy who's playing 7-8 minutes?
So now, but Hayward's coming off the bench. So maybe Morris is the bigger issue for Brown.
Well, the physical altercation in Orlando, I think, might tell you that.
Exactly.
Or Miami, wherever it was.
Exactly. Like, you know, maybe it's really more about him than it is about the Hayward situation. Sort of is what it is. Like, that one's not going to change. I don't know. Maybe Brown is irritated by that one, too. But I feel like Brown is in the middle of all of it.
We've got Mike in Peabody. I'm sorry, Mark in Medford joins us next on the Bruins. I'll get to you, Mike, in a second. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, Fargo, how's it going?
It's going.
With the Bruins, two games in a row, up two goals. Torey Krug on the ice, bang, bang, the Bruins are playing in overtime. Okay? There is no need for him to be on the ice when they're up two goals. The kid is a defensive liability out there. He's great on the power play. He's a good offensive puck-moving defenseman. But when he is on the ice, goals go in the net.
Okay, it's been...
They keep talking about trading him. That's enough with the talk. Pull the damn trigger.
Okay, Mark. Krug is a piece, except the whole thing about giving up leads, they've all done it. They've all done it. So I think you're talking about the Kings game where they gave up the two-goal lead in the third period. Krug was out there for those. The night before in New York against the Rangers, they're up 3-1 in the third. Two third-period goals, Chara and Carlo. Chara, who's still your best defensive defenseman, and Carlo, who's been good all year, were out there. And just let guys wide open at the post. Were sloppy in front of the net, weak in front of the net. And the Bruins have given up leads all season long. All season long, they can't hold leads, which is sort of a scary prospect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really. But you know, strangely enough, like I don't feel like defense is a need. You know, for years we talked about they don't have any young D. They don't have a young D. They're so thin on D. Their D is, even with those blown leads, have held it together this year. They really have. Now, if you're telling me I can make Krug the piece going out for a real forward, I'm okay with that because I have Grizzlick, who I think gives me 80 cents on the dollar for, you know, 20 cents on the price. So I'm okay with dealing Krug if someone really wants him. And if you can improve your forward group with Krug, no problem. I do it. But I don't feel like defense is a need.
Yeah, I feel overall good about the personnel they have there. And it looks like McAvoy's coming around now, too.
Great point.
So McAvoy had a good weekend. I mean, he had a good offensive game on Saturday, good defensive game.
Physicality has come back.
All of it. I mean, all of it, everything. He's being more aggressive in the offensive zone. Like, it looks like it's starting to sort of a click again with him. And look, I'm not a big Krug fan. You know, I was just looking it up as you were talking. He's got 39 points in 45 games, which is great. And he's a -3.
Yeah, always.
I mean, because they all come in the power play.
Righto.
He gets all his points in the power play. So he's great when you're a man up. But other than that, I'm with the caller. In a tight game, you don't want him on the ice. You don't want him in your own zone.
A reentry Monday continues after Murray's 90-second update. The emailer sent me this nugget. And Murray will give you details.
This is great.
Kareem Hunt was signed before Manny Machado or Bryce Harper. NFL free agency hasn't even begun. The season ended like 2 minutes ago. And one of the biggest names off the board in the NFL is already gone. Meanwhile, the two biggest names in baseball are still there, and the thing starts tomorrow. Think of that. 3 months later, they're still sitting there, and one of the top football free agents is already gone.
Yeah, what's the rush?
Details here with Murray, 90 seconds, no commercials, and we're right back.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.